Hello there. Today is Wednesday, June 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a Yazidi woman pleads with U.S. lawmakers to hold the Islamic State accountable. North Korea tests two ballistic missiles. Extreme heat sparks wildfires in Southern California. Hillary Clinton once again taking aim at Donald Trump.
Just like he shouldn't have his finger on the button, he shouldn't have his hands on our economy.
Also ahead, a unique puppet theater becoming a rare part of American culture. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, we begin with fresh concerns over North Korea's activities, with reports it has test-fired two ballistic missiles. Joining us now, live from South Korea, Seoul News Bureau Chief Brian Patton. Brian, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
What do we know so far?
Well, there were two missile tests conducted early this morning in the eastern city of Wonsan. Sorry. And the first missile test failed shortly after it was launched. The second missile reportedly flew about 400 kilometers before falling into the Sea of Japan, or the East Sea, as it is called in South Korea.
What type of missiles, what type of range do these missiles have if they're fired successfully?
So, yeah, the last missile test may have failed in the sense that it did not reach the 3,000-kilometer distance the Musudan intermediate-range missile is designed for, and it did not demonstrate, my understanding is it did not demonstrate the atmospheric reentry capability needed to accurately hit a target. But with each test, analysts are seeing that the North Korean military is advancing and progressing in developing this weapon.
How are North Korea's neighbors responding?
It's a situation right now where you're basically calling in the usual suspects, where the U.S. and South Korea and Japan are objecting and denouncing this. And China will likely shortly call for a more measured response and for everyone to go back to talks. South Korea, I believe, is going to try to call for a UN Security Council meeting to talk about further sanctions. But no one really expects any further sanctions at this time. There's a general sense that the sanctions that were imposed a couple months ago now need time for their impact to be felt. China also doesn't want to put such harsh sanctions on North Korea that it would do such serious damage that it would cause instability in the region. So we're kind of at a standoff. There is some speculation that North Korea understands the position it is in and that it basically gets a free pass to do some of these lower-level tests. Now, if North Korea would conduct another nuclear test or maybe even a long-range missile test, that may get the attention of the international community.
All right. Well, we appreciate your insights. Thanks so much. Seoul News Bureau Chief Brian Patton, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, 2 days ahead of the referendum that will decide the future of Britain, it's not certain whether the majority of voters will support remaining in the European Union or leaving the bloc. Last week's murder of a parliament member who supported membership in the 28-nation group appears to have moved some voters to switch sides. VOA's Letizia Hoke reports.
British lawmakers on Monday returned from a recess to pay tribute to Labour Party parliamentarian Joe Cox, whose murder appears to have been politically motivated. Prime Minister David Cameron quoted Cox's words in his appeal for unity.
For in remembering Joe, we show today what she said in this House to be true, and I know it will be quoted many times today. We are far more united and have far more in common with each other than things that divide us.
Britain appears to be divided in half regarding the EU membership, as are its politicians. The Prime Minister has argued passionately against leaving the Union, but some of his fellow Conservatives say the country has lost much of its sovereignty to Brussels.
Let me tell you, there's nowhere else in the world that is engaged in this kind of experiment of fusing countries together to create a super state, a United States of Europe. It is anti-democratic.
Many Britons reject the EU quotas on immigration, fearing that migrants would burden the country's welfare system. But the economic downsides to leaving the bloc may be worse.
The impact will largely be negative because Britain in Europe means that you have one trading bloc. It's easier for people here to export and import. And there are a number of other ramifications. So an exit would, I think, would be on balance negative.
The Obama administration has expressed support for Britain's EU membership, but the White House said Monday the decision belongs to the British people.
So the British people will decide what they believe is in the best interest of their country, but the president's made clear what he believes is in the best interest of the United States. And given the special relationship between our two countries, we believe that matters.
The latest opinion polls show that momentum to leave the bloc has stalled since Cox's murder on Thursday, but many voters still remain undecided. Slarica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Well, and the murdered woman's husband, Brendan Cox, has broken his silence by thanking the public for their support and vowing to carry on her legacy.
She had very strong political views, and I believe she was killed because of those views. I think she died because of them. And she would want to stand up for those in death as much as she did in life.
And we have much more on this story at voanews.com. Now let's take a look at what's trending on social media. G. Abby Lee is here, and it looks like celebrities are chiming in on Brexit.
Hi, Lori. We're seeing a wide range of reactions on Twitter, with celebrities using hashtag EUREF, hashtag Brexit, and either hashtag vote leave or hashtag vote remain. But let's begin with a neutral reaction. British actress and activist Emma Watson has a huge following with more than 22 million followers on Twitter. Her handle is at E.M. Watson, and she tweeted a selfie with her hand out in front with a big X in her palm. She captioned it, "Don't forget to vote on Thursday, no excuses. Hashtag EUREF." Now, when you use that hashtag, it generates an image of a ballot going into a box. Within 13 hours, more than 34,000 people liked that tweet.
So tell us a little bit about some of the other tweets that were more opinionated.
Sure. As you know, writer J.K. Rowling is prolific and opinionated on Twitter, and she shared her thoughts on Brexit, too. Her handle is at JK_Rowling, and she tweeted this. "If one more person tells me voting Remain is for the rich, who will suffer if the experts are right and 100,000 jobs go and welfare is slashed?" So we can safely assume she's in the Remain camp. Former Spice Girls member Victoria Beckham is on our side. Beckham simply tweeted, hashtag Remain.
Wow, those are some pretty big names giving those opinions. What about the other side of the controversy?
Actress Elizabeth Hurley wants out. Her handle is simply her first and last name, and she shared an image of a butterfly coming out of a box that says, "Out and into the world." She captioned it, "Beautiful graphics, beautiful sentiment. Hashtag vote leave, hashtag Brexit." Another UK actress, Joan Collins, also tweeted Brexit, and she used the emojis of the British flag, a thumbs up and a heart. Back to you, Lori.
All right, thanks so much. You can find her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the top stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. donates $20 million for Fallujah refugees. Women in combat, the few, the proud, the physically fit. Internal rifts over Syria policy could be a headache for the next U.S. president. The U.S. will allow flights for small commercial drones. And millions in India take part in World Yoga Day. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. An international edition continues. Lawmakers in Washington have been looking to better understand the Islamic State terror group. And Tuesday, members of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee heard from a woman who survived unimaginable brutality.
Bername Hazarit Kachkara El Musile Ambuna Sabia Nevdaste Dajda.
I was one of the girls who were enslaved in Mosul. I was one of the, among the thousands of the women who were taken to Mosul.
VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden watched this moving hearing and joins us now. Hi, Jeff. Tell us exactly what she said.
They heard from Nadia Murad, who is a young Yazidi woman who was 19 when Islamic State forces, when their fighters moved into Sinjar and began exterminating and enslaving the Yazidi population there. And she described it for lawmakers during this hearing that was really aimed to get at the ideology of Islamic State. What is it about? How are people trapped in it? What are they really preaching in? And to learn for lawmakers what more the U.S. can do to defeat the Islamic State. And her testimony was chilling. At one point, she was talking about how the thousands of women and children were rounded up. The men were being killed. She lost six of her brothers, and then later her mother was killed that same day. And then she talked about how she was the lucky ones, or one of the lucky ones, because at the time she was 19 when she was enslaved and raped, when there were nine-year-olds who were going through the same thing.
That's just hard to even listen to. I'm sure there was quite an intense reaction from that.
On Capitol Hill these days, the political environment can be very combative, very tense, but the atmosphere in the meeting room, it was quiet. You could hear her words echo, and she spoke through a translator. Absolute silence, 100% attention on what she was saying and how she was saying it. And it also gave that type of importance to what some of the other panelists were saying. There was an expert in Islamic religious studies. There was a researcher who's written quite a lot about Islamic State. And there was a Syrian who fled from the area even before Islamic State moved in because he's gay. And he was coming under pressure not from Islamic State, but his life was being threatened by other extremist groups. And the picture that they painted of the extremist environment, it was scary, I think, for some of the lawmakers in the sense that it didn't take a lot. It doesn't take long to radicalize someone, that there's just enough of the religion in there to find ways to ensnare people, that even though Islamic State is losing ground, losing territory, and that its proto-state, its self-declared caliphate, is weakening, the group itself still has tremendous reach. And one of the experts who's written a lot about the Islamic State, Hassan Hassan, was saying that you have to understand Islamic State is in this for the long haul.
This woman that you mentioned who testified before these lawmakers, she's obviously an activist now. How did she get free?
She was asked that during the hearing because she told her story, obviously. And at one point, one of the lawmakers said, "How did you escape?" And she said she tried escaping several times because she got to the point where she could no longer live, as she said, hour to hour, treasuring and just clinging to every moment where she wasn't being sold to somewhere else, where she wasn't being raped. She couldn't take it anymore. And the first time she tried, she wasn't able to. She was caught, brought back, punishment. She was gang raped. But yet she tried again, and this time she got away, and she said she at this point had been sold, and she was in Mosul. And with the help of a family in Mosul, she said, they were able to help her forge some Islamic State documents so that she was able to get out. And Nadia Murad, she's talked to before the United Nations. She's been telling her story elsewhere. To see someone so young with a look in their eyes of determination but yet resignation, it's hard to describe. And all the lawmakers commented on this. She has to have tremendous strength to be able to come up and talk about these things.
What was her message regarding ISIS?
She expressed sympathies and her condolences and said her heart broke when she learned about what happened in Orlando with the shooter who pledged himself to Islamic State and killed 49 people. But she also said that she wasn't surprised, sadly, because she knew unless Islamic State was stopped, that they would find ways to export their crimes all over.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff. Also on Tuesday, U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch did visit Orlando, Florida, 9 days after what she called a shattering attack at a gay nightclub.
It is indeed a cruel irony that a community that is defined almost exclusively by whom they love is so often a target of hate.
Lynch also announced a $1 million emergency grant to help Florida law enforcement pay for costs related to the shooting. Well, Hillary Clinton gave a speech on Tuesday in Ohio, one of the most important battleground states. She sought to define Donald Trump as little more than a con man whose ignorance and ego would tank the global economy, bankrupt Americans, and risk the country's future.
Economists on the right and the left and the center all agree Trump would throw us back into recession.
Well, the speech was similar to one earlier this month in San Diego, in which Clinton tried to undercut the Republican candidate's foreign policy credentials. This time, she questioned whether Trump has the temperament to guide the economy, and she repeatedly pointed to his business record as evidence of how he would treat small businesses and working families.
We can't let him bankrupt America like we are one of his failed casinos.
Trump responded on Twitter and seemed to embrace one of Clinton's attack lines, writing, "I am the king of debt. That has been great for me as a businessman, but is bad for the country. I made a fortune off of debt. We'll fix U.S. Meanwhile, Clinton is expected to pay a visit to Democratic lawmakers in Washington later today. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson joins me now. What will Clinton be doing?
Well, I certainly think on her docket will be plans to talk about party unity. She's finally put Bernie Sanders in the rearview mirror. That part of the primary season and election season is over with now. She can talk about what elements of his message that really appealed to voters should go on the Democratic platform when they all gather together at the convention later this summer and see what their concerns are, what they want from her in terms of her leadership going into the general election.
She's definitely having a good week, while Donald Trump seems to be having a pretty bad week, firing his campaign manager. Apparently, he doesn't have much finances.
He doesn't have much of a campaign infrastructure nationally, which is something that you absolutely need to have if you're going to run a successful campaign, targeting all of these different states, putting the electoral map in your favor. It already isn't in Donald Trump's favor. He really needs to make that push if he's going to go up against Hillary Clinton, who knows that she's going to get the Latino vote, the African-American vote, a lot of the female vote coming out, not only to vote for her, but also to vote against Donald Trump. So he needs to find a way quick to address that. And some people think that firing his campaign manager may be that first step to really turn things around. You know, Corey Lewandowski had a great on-the-ground strategy, talking to voters about their concerns that may not really translate well to the general election. So if Trump can get the right person in there, he may be able to turn things around.
Well, Lewandowski's philosophy seemed to be let Trump be Trump, and that certainly worked for Trump in the primary season.
Not in the general election, right. And now we're in the general election, even though we haven't gotten to the conventions yet. Now we know who the two major party nominees are, and he needs to figure out a strategy quick to go up against Hillary Clinton.
I know you're planning on attending both the Democratic and Republican conventions, and we're hearing some clues that we will find out at those conventions about both presumptive nominees' pick for vice president. What are you hearing?
Right. So the conventions are a great venue for making these big, dramatic VP announcements. Traditionally, each candidate always gets a bump coming out of the conventions, and you get another bump from announcing your VP pick. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people had been speculating for a while that Elizabeth Warren might be Hillary Clinton's VP pick. I don't think that that's a possibility, because she won't want another strong female leader on the ticket with her. She'll need to balance things out another way. Of course, there's always Bernie Sanders in the mix. That could really bring in the young voters who traditionally Clinton has some trouble with. So it'll be really interesting to see who Clinton picks. And then, of course, The big question is, who is Donald Trump going to pick? Because that is bound to be an interesting choice. He really probably needs to pick a more established politician to make the argument that he has that political experience on his ticket.
Is it wise for a candidate to pick someone that will help them win, that may or may not be someone they would get along with in the long term, just for the sake of helping them succeed in the campaign?
Absolutely, because the VP pick is all about balancing out your ticket. You know, traditionally, presidents have not always worked well with their VPs. It's a weird position in the American political system. But really, it's a matter of picking the party ticket and appealing to the widest swath of voters going into the general election.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks so much. Congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
International Edition continues. Two wildfires are burning in the San Gabriel Mountains, 20 miles northeast of Los Angeles, California. About 600 homes have been evacuated. Fire officials say conditions are difficult.
Very steep, rugged terrain in old fuel beds, as we would describe it, areas of the forest that have not burned in quite a number of years.
Air pollution regulators have issued a smoke advisory due to two wildfires burning in those mountains north of Los Angeles. Puppet theaters used to be prevalent in the United States, but these days there are only about 40 that even are in existence. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to the only one in West Virginia, the Wonderment Puppet Theater.
Hello, baby!
Joe Santoro is doing what he likes best, writing and performing puppet shows for the young and young at heart. He creates stories that combine traditional fairy tales with his imaginative ideas, like The Frog Prince.
Now don't forget your promise!
I try to put myself into their seat. I want to be entertained. I want to see something different and sort of immerse myself into this fantasy that's there.
Santoro grew up in New York and recalls that puppet shows were popular when he was a child. He says kids today like them too.
They like stuff that's ridiculous and silly and with a lot of characters to it.
An elementary school art teacher, Santoro used puppets to help teach special needs students. A few years ago, he and his wife bought this 19th century house in the small town of Martinsburg, West Virginia, to create the Wonderment Puppet Theater, which also has a one-of-a-kind play area. Most of his audience drive in from large cities a couple of hours away. First, Santoro warms them up. Then he tells the tale of a king with a daughter who is a spoiled princess and thinks she can get anything she wants. That is, until she meets the Frog Prince.
You must let me sleep at the foot of your bed tonight.
After the performance, one little boy said he was fascinated by the frog, especially after it fell asleep and started snoring.
He sounded like a big giant scaring everybody.
Can you make that sound? Yeah.
His mother enjoyed seeing a puppet show for the first time.
It doesn't have anything to do with screens or TV or computers. It's just about having fun and using your imagination.
Santoro considers himself a big kid who enjoys sharing his playfulness and imagination.
Every time I get back there, it's like a new show for me. I just love every minute of it.
No matter if the crowd is big or small, for Santoro and his puppets, the show must go on. Deborah Block, VOA News, Martinsburg, West Virginia.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA says a team of astronomers has discovered the youngest fully formed exoplanet that has ever been detected. This new planet, called K233b, is only 11 million years old. Compared to the 4.5 billion year old Earth, this exoplanet is a mere newborn. The discovery was made using NASA's Kepler Space Telescope and a ground-based telescope at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii. The baby planet has been described as being a bit larger than Neptune and orbits its star once every 5 days at a distance of only 7.5 million kilometers, or almost 10 times closer to its star than Mercury is to our sun. Caltech's Eric Pettigura says the newborn planet will not only help scientists better understand how planets form, but will also provide fresh insight into the processes that led to the formation of Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Find us anytime again at voanews.com. And follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thank you so much for being with us today. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the invitation of the Cambodian government, the United States and Cambodian militaries conducted humanitarian assistance events and military-to-military subject matter expert changes in Kampot Province, Cambodia this month as part of Pacific Angel 2016. During this mission, approximately 80 U.S.-Cambodian servicemen and women, along with personnel from Australia, Vietnam, and Thailand, worked together in partnership with local NGOs to provide humanitarian assistance to the residents of Kampot Province. Pacific Angel is a joint and combined humanitarian assistance mission conducted in various countries throughout the Indo-Asia-Pacific region with the active participation and leadership of the U.S. Air Force. Pacific Angel includes general health, dental, optometry, pediatrics, physical therapy, and engineering programs, as well as various humanitarian aid and disaster relief subject matter expert exchanges. The mission enhances participating nations' humanitarian assistance and disaster relief capabilities while providing needed services to people throughout the region. In Cambodia, engineers worked on reconstruction projects for 4 local schools and 2 health centers in the city of Kampot, and medical service providers conducted health service outreach in the Twik Chu and Kampon Trak districts in Kampot province. The subject matter expert exchanges between the two militaries focused on public health emergencies and humanitarian aid and disaster response. Since 2007, Pacific Angel missions have improved the lives of tens of thousands of people across the region, while ensuring that the region's militaries are prepared to work together to address humanitarian crises. This was the 4th Pacific Angel mission conducted in Cambodia. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Cambodia, to help improve the lives of people in Cambodia and throughout the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
for.